How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Hennon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
I believe that is What's the Rumpus? What's the Rumpus by Jack White from his rockin' new album, No Name. He will be playing, I believe, Sunday night at Mempho.
Mempho's this weekend, and the 25th anniversary of the High Tone also this weekend. And then we have Grizzlies open practice on Sunday this weekend. Busy weekend here in Memphis. Good to have you back. Good to have you back in studio, back from Nashville. So today you wrote about Ja Morant, or today or tomorrow or yesterday, I mean, whenever it went up. You wrote about Ja Morant and Desmond Bane. And you did ask the question as to whether they are the best backcourt, easy for me to say, in the league. What's the argument? Are they?
Yeah, I don't really spend a lot of. I mean, that's sort of just a little thing to throw out there. The piece is not that concerned with the answer to that question. I think, you know, in terms of dual impact, dual like production, I think they're probably, you know, right up there, maybe second to Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They're more of a classic backcourt though than Luka and Kyrie. Luka's sort of a point forward type.
Yeah, the interesting stat, and again, of course, the piece was not about that. It was about them and the year and what to expect and what they can get better at and everything else. But it was interesting that there are, over the last 2 years, 13 guards that have averaged 20 points, 4 assists, 4 rebounds at 55% true shooting percentage, 13 of them. And there are only 2 teams that have 2.
Right.
That's the Grizzlies and the Mavs. So it is a pretty... it is certainly a pretty potent combo. It was funny though, the stats of those two together, as limited as that may have been, were not dazzling last year.
The team stats, yeah. I mean, the team was a disaster. So you can put almost any kind of combination together you want, and the numbers are not going to look good.
Right.
It was a mess. And so when Ja and Dez played together last season, the Grizzlies had a 57th. Percentile offense. So of 0 to 100, 100 being best. They were in the 57th percentile as a team offense with those two on the floor. And that's not so great. But without both of them on the floor, they were a 10th percentile offense. And most of the minutes, not most, the majority, more than 50% of the minutes they played together, they played with Bismack Biyombo at center.
Right.
And that's not even counting, like, you know, the David Roddy minutes and the Zaire Williams minutes and some of the mess that was going on last year. But the previous two seasons, when those guys have both been on the floor, they've been right up to close to 90th percentile on offense.
Right.
And that's for a team that has not been necessarily always great offensive. It's been more of a defensive-oriented team.
So one of the interesting things is in all this talk of changes to the structure offensively and defensively, there's this, there's no positionless basketball. That's the phrase that's being thrown around.
That's the buzzword.
The buzzword, positionless basketball. And so what does this mean for them? Does it mean they're going to be acting more like two combo guards with Ja Moore off the ball and Dez Moore on the ball? What does it mean as it applies to them? What do you imagine it means?
Well, I do think for Ja, it's going to mean him on the ball a little bit less, and him, it's going to be important for him to be a threat and be an impact player or scoring threat without dominating the ball as much. I think that was going to be important for Ja in any system, just because, I mean, we've known from day one that Ja's growth as a shooter is important to him, period. And it's more important in this situation, but it's always important. And I've written about this before a couple years ago, and I sort of went back to it in this column. The magnitude of usage that he is carrying for a small guard, there's not a lot of history of like ultimate success relying that much on a small guard. It's one thing to rely on Luka or LeBron or one of those kind of guys, but right, relying on like, you know, a small guard to be a ball dominant, everything runs through the small guard, is not a recipe for ultimate success in the NBA. And so I think the Grizzlies were going to need to sort of lower that usage a little bit, find more balance offensively, have Ja be more of a threat without the ball, no matter what they do. But in this system they seem to be trying to install, it seems to me it both encourages that and depends on it a little bit more than it would otherwise. And I think, you know, then it flips the other way with Bane. If Ja's off the ball a little bit more, Bane's probably on the ball a little bit more. We've seen that already. I mean, that was thrust upon Desmond Bane last season.
Right, yeah.
And we saw him improve as a playmaker. We saw him improve as a guy who can, you know, off the dribble, get into the paint and score. So I think in terms of blending their two games and both becoming a little bit more of combos, I think Dez is a little bit further along in that regard. But I think it's an interesting subplot for Ja, yeah.
It's funny, though, because, I mean, when you talk about positionless basketball and you know, Zach Edey is like, okay, well, how does that work? Like, it's weirdly enough, this seems like a very position heavy team to be positionless basketball, including the backcourt. Like, Ja is your classic ball handling, and he can't shoot particularly.
Yeah.
And Dez is,
this is sort of what I read about in the comments, that when they emerged together, they were like the platonic ideal of a backcourt. Ja was the classic point guard, off the dribble, get into the lane, great passer, break down a defense and make plays. And Dez was the classic shooting guard, scoring guard, a deadly shooter off the ball, whether it's catch and shoot, whether it's coming off a curl, whatever. It was the classic backcourt. And I don't think they should lose all of that. But I do think, even if they weren't doing this dramatic of an overhaul, and I have my concerns about that, but even if they weren't doing that, Ja being more of a threat, bringing Ja's usage down, hopefully to exchange like more effort on defense, the less wear and tear, to have the offense be less dependent on him. So if the defense like loads up on him, it can go other, the ball can go other places. I think having him be more of an off ball scoring threat is going to be good for the team, like in any situation.
Right. So, you do sort of address in the piece how much each has already moved towards being more of a combo guard. And again, to take Dez first, obviously has done much more on the ball. He's had to by necessity. But then you also point out he's become pretty good at finishing at the rim.
That's part of being on the ball.
Right,
is being able to get into the paint.
But he does it. He does effectively at it.
Yeah, he was 68% at the rim last season, which is a very high number for a guard. And so that was a real growth area for him. And he had to really adjust and sort of develop his way, you know, to finish plays, because he's 6'5", he's got short arms, he doesn't jump out of the gym, he's not going up dunking on people, right? He's had to
be crafty
with it, yeah.
Whereas for Ja, how much of this just depends on shooting? And he is, what, a career 32.7%
shooter? I think a lot of it depends on shooting. That's the most important part of it. I do think with Ja, Ja is unusual among ball-dominant guards in that he is a dynamic finisher, too. And this is something we've already seen with Ja. One of the things I point out when I get sort of deeper into some of the stat stuff is that he has been, wherever he's ranked among guards in usage the last couple of seasons, whether that's second or third, if you look at other like tracking stats that sort of document how much you actually dominate the ball, like your time of possession, how many seconds you have the ball per touch, how many dribbles you have the ball per times you have it. He's like second and third in usage, but he's further down the charts than the other stuff. And so there's a little bit of a gap between his usage, and usage is like the outcome of a play.
Right.
That's calculated not by how much you have the ball, but how many shots you take, how many turnovers, how many assists, how often are you ending a possession, right? And so the other stuff is how often, how much time you spend with the ball, how much you dribble and all that. There has been a little bit of disconnect, a little bit of gap between the magnitude of his usage and the magnitude of his ball dominance. And I think that's primarily not because he's knocking down lots of jump shots off the ball. Like, his usage is not coming from
his
finishing, from jump shots.
Back cuts.
It's coming from he can get off the ball in the half court and go up and catch the lob. And I think especially in transition, he can give the ball up and then go get it back.
Right.
And like give the ball up and then run down the court, and he's the guy finishing the fast break. So I think he has some of those abilities that like a Trae Young doesn't have, a Luka doesn't have, a Jalen Brunson doesn't have. And I think that is very useful in this situation if they're going toward more of a motion cutting kind of offense, because Ja can be a threat in that if he gets used to it. But the shooting thing is more important, and that's less certain.
Well, and I don't know why I would, I mean, particularly given that he's been injured, right? And I don't know why I would expect much progress this year. Like, I wouldn't.
I really have no idea. I will say that his year, was it year two or year three? At one point, he jumped up to 34%, five attempts a game. And that was a real meaningful step forward. And then, I guess that was year, is this year five for him? I can't keep up.
Yeah.
I think
it was year two he took the step, wasn't it?
I think it was year three.
What you're saying. Okay.
But whatever it was, in the last year and change, like nine games last year and then the full season before, it declined back down. And so, you know, these are all small samples. So I really don't know. I don't think he's going to jump up and shoot 39% right. from three. The question is he going to shoot 31 or 35?
Right.
I think either of those is entirely possible.
Yeah. So then other two other questions you addressed with both of them. One was durability. And one of the striking things there is we think of Ja as this breakable figure. And in fact, Dez has also had his issues. Of his last 162 games, Dez has played 100.
Yes. Maybe that should have been 164. Maybe I typoed that. I was thinking of the two seasons, 82 and 82.
Right.
But of the past two seasons, he's played 100. He's played 100 games.
I may have written it down wrong. Go ahead. Yeah.
He's missed. It hasn't been like one big injury. It's been, you know, he's had back stuff. He's had, you know, multiple foot thing. He's had multiple things over the course of two seasons. Like Ja's had multiple things. The shoulder injury was a big thing that cost him a lot of time. But if you go back over Ja's career, there's like a little knee thing here, a little knee thing there, a little ankle thing there, a hand thing here. It sort of adds up. And Ja got a jump start on that stuff adding up.
Right.
And Dez has sort of caught up the last couple of years. Yeah.
And we can't know. I mean, that's just we hope they're. But it is interesting. The 65 game is the cutoff for eligibility for postseason.
Ja's hit it once. That was his rookie season, and he played 67 games.
He's hit it once.
Yeah. I think unless he has like a real. I don't think like little nagging stuff is going to keep him from hitting that 65 this season. But I think real injuries could keep him from hitting that 65, and that remains to be seen.
If he, by the way, is not, when he is injured, do you think Scottie Pippen Jr. is going to start at point guard?
I don't know. I mean, hopefully that's not a decision they have to make, like, you know, in the first week of the season.
Right.
And so we'll see. We'll see how Scottie. No, he will. But I'm saying the decision you make about that now may be different than the decision you make in 2 months when you've seen Scottie Pippen play and you gather more intel about how he's playing. Like if they were playing a game tonight and Ja was not available, that counted. Would they start Scottie Pippen? I don't know.
Right.
I think you would hope to get to the point where you would be comfortable with that. Yeah.
And then defense is the other one. And there, Taylor Jenkins talked about brutal honesty.
Yep.
Brutal honesty.
Brutal honesty.
Brutal honesty. What do you make of the brutal honesty?
I mean, I don't know. We get everything secondhand in these scrums or whatever. I think, you know, he's challenged them defensively. I do think it's true that, and he said at some other point of that, you know, the defensive anchors are going to be Jaren and Marcus. But it's going to be important for John Dez at sort of point of attack to be stronger defensively. I think, you know, Desmond Bain a year ago in media day, that's what he came out and said. You know, Dylan Brooks is gone. I want to step up. I want to take on the big assignments on defense. Well, the season just blew up. And like, this dude is literally, if you want to go back and watch those games, running around in circles trying to just get off a jump shot, you know, with the ball. And so I give him a pass on last season as far as that goes. Desmond Bane has been considered a decent defender because he's strong and he's smart and he cares. There's a limitation athletically. He's never going to be a shutdown guy. Ja, I will say that Ja, I do think Ja was better. You threw out last season because he played 9 games. I think he was, last season was year 5. Now I remember. He was better in year 3 and 4 in defense than he was in year 1 and 2. You can see that in some of like the basic counting stats, the block rate, the steal rate, the defensive rebound rate. If you look at some of these advanced numbers, the defensive win share, all that kind of stuff, it looks better. If you just watch the games, I do think, and I mean, he started from a very, very low place on defense. Right. He did not play defense in college, like period.
Right.
He literally just stood there.
He didn't even try.
I do think Ja's gotten better, but I think there's more room to get better.
All right, you can read that piece over at the Daily Memphis. Anything else particularly strike you from the Nashville experience? How was it all?
It was fine. It was not a very Nashville experience, which was fine by me because I was just trying to go there and work because they were doing it at this private high school that was really outside of town and on the western side, so you know, probably 20 minutes from Nashville on the Memphis side. So I was staying at a hotel there too, and I really only went into like the heart of Nashville once. So that was pretty convenient as far as that goes. I mean, the thing that really jumped out, I mean, you had the little Jaren injury scare that I think, you know, people got too worked up over. The big thing that jumped out was the magnitude of all the talk about the offense and how dramatically they seemed to claim that they're changing the offense. And I have some trepidation about that, but also I haven't seen them play. I mean, we'll finally see them play a couple games this week, then we can talk about that a little bit better.
Okay, and then the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was John Hollinger had his piece up, I don't know if you saw it, about teams that he expects, he did teams that he expects to overachieve.
Yeah, I scanned the Grizzlies part of that. The rest of it, I just saw the teams, but I didn't read it because I'm still haven't written my own stuff.
Well, let's just focus on the Grizzlies part of it.
Yeah.
Grizzlies, the over-under is 47.5 wins. He says they will underachieve. They will not hit 47.5. And the theory is, a lot has happened. Basically says they're not just going to revert back to the level where they were, prior. He said a lot has happened since 2023. Most of it has chipped away at the formerly superior depth that was the engine for much of Memphis's success. You've certainly made that point before.
Yep.
The full strength bench for this season isn't notably bad as much as it's vanilla meh. And that was before injuries to Vince Williams and G.G. Jackson. The front court is a question mark that could go either way. Brandon Clark, Achilles, and rookie Zach Edey, an unknown. Still, projecting the 9th pick in a weak draft to make a positive impact as a rookie is an unlikely bet. And then looming over it all, of course, is the Ja Morant question. Etc. Finally, considering the neighborhood they're in, getting to 48 wins in this year's Western Conference is going to be tough sledding, etc. So bench doesn't really seem that Zach Edey and Brandon Clark basically is sort of the other one.
Yeah, I don't the Jaw off court stuff is not a factor in my in my projection of the team at all. The bench is definitely not as good as it was when they won 56 games a couple years ago. But I mean, if they're healthy, like, Brandon Clark's a really good bench player, and Luke Kennard's a really good bench player, and I think if Vince Williams is coming off the bench, and then you add, let's say, Scottie Pippen and Jake LaRavia, I think, or Santi Aldama, I actually think that's a good bench. I think that's above average bench easily, and I think if you look around the rest of the conference, like, I mean, there's all kinds of teams that have worse depth issues than the Grizzlies.
Bench.
There's all kinds of teams that have worse depth issues than the Grizzlies. So the great eye of concerns, it's not the Ja off court, and it's not really the bench. I do think the Edey thing is a wild card because they're depending on him day one to step in, and like there are people who think he's going to be great, and there are people who think he just can't play in the NBA, and like we're going to find out, right? So there's a lot of variance there. My setting aside like the injury stuff, which I know people think that the Grizzlies are special in this regard, and over multiple years they're not. Like we'll see. The two things that give me the trepidation, I believe in Edey, but I haven't seen it yet. And so I think the Edey thing is uncertain. And I'll just go back, and John didn't mention this because he hasn't been down in training camp. I worry about growing pains with the degree of system changes they're doing. If that gets them off to a slow start because guys are like trying to remember how they're supposed to run to the right places and all that.
Particularly for this team, which, as we said, seems like they got this electric point guard. They have this big-ass center. Are they really going to be all of a sudden positionless basketball?
I am not a basketball ideologue.
Right.
I will tell you that a Ja Morant, Zach Edey, vanilla, meat potatoes pick and roll will yield you points.
Right.
And so I got no problem doing that. And so we'll see.
On the Zach Edey one, basically he says ninth pick in an it's less Zach Edey can't play dead, like some people think, as much like look at ninth pick centers, like they don't come in and play.
Betting on rookies, period.
Right.
Betting on rookies, period.
Yeah. And now you're betting on a like Derek Lively was good last year, but you don't have a lot of other
Betting on rookies, period, is a bum thing. But that's a broad statement. And we're talking about a hyper-specific statement. We're talking about one person.
One person who's played more college basketball.
4 years, right. who seems to be stepping into a team where, yes, he's going to be asked probably to start, but he's going to be asked to be the fourth option. He's been asked to rebound and set picks and, like, finish at the rim. Like, he's not asked, he's been asked to play a big role, but a very limited role that seems like I feel good about it. But I feel better about it when I see him in some preseason games and you know, he looks good.
In retrospect, is it surprising that they didn't hedge their bet at all there? Like, there's Jay Huff sitting there, but they don't, like, they don't have plan B.
Yeah, the Jay Huff thing is interesting. I'm going to be very interested to see him play in preseason, too, because he's 27 years old. It's weird he hasn't gotten more of a chance, but there are people who watch, like, G League stuff a lot who are convinced, like, he's an NBA player. What's crazy, he hasn't been on a team. There may be something there. He also played at Virginia in a system similar to the system they're trying to put in. You got Jaron, you got whatever. Yeah, there's only so many roster spots, and so I don't know. We'll see.
You're back in Memphis. You already came here. We went through your eating tour when you first got back, which was impressive. Gus's.
I've dialed it back.
Are you going anywhere else? Have you been to Amelia Jean's, by the way?
No, and Daily Memphis is not paying for me to go to Million Jeans, so I'm probably not going to go to Million Jeans. I actually am going to the Lobbyist. My wife is in town. We're going to go eat.
And you loved you. You said you had a terrific meal.
I've only eaten there once, and it was the best meal I've had in Memphis the last couple of years. So we're going back.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, Chris Herndon. You agreed the piece over at the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break. Jeffrey's going to tell you what to bet on in college football this weekend. Back in a moment. 92.9 FM ESPN.
On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. It is that time, Jeffrey's bets. Jeffrey, I get the sense this hasn't been the greatest of years for us.
Well, Jeff, after starting out 0-5 last week, we are 6-2 in our last 8 bets.
Well, that's good.
So many are saying, is this the week?
Many are saying this is the turnaround week.
Correct. So we went 6-7 last week.
What do we got this week, Jeffrey?
All right, Jeff, let's start with a couple of Friday night games. Here's a fun fact for you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday night games this year, the underdog, 10-3 against the spread. So we got two games that we're penciling in tonight. Number one, let's start with Oregon and Michigan State. Mario Cristobal has faced Justin Wilcox 3 times. Well, that kind of applies a little bit later. But more importantly, Jonathan Smith, former Oregon State coach, taking on Oregon. This is just way too many points, 23.5. I will take them. Give me Michigan State with Oregon looking ahead to the Ohio State game.
Michigan State plus 23.5.
Correct.
Over Oregon. All right. Next.
Jeff, this is, according to Chris Felica, this is the first time since 2008 that UNLV is favored over a Power 4 or 5 opponent. UNLV beat Iowa State 34-31 as a 2.5-point favorite. Since then, the Rebels have been an underdog in 25 straight games against P4, P5 opposition. The last time they were this big of a favorite over a Power 4 or 5 team, 2003, when UNLV lost 46-22 to Kansas as an 11-point
favorite. This is UNLV with their new quarterback,
right,
Jeffrey.
Everyone hopping on. Everyone's loving UNLV.
On the
give me the 6.5 with the Cuse.
You want Cuse?
Give me
plus
the Cuse.
Plus 6.5. By the way, I do want to say this. Occasionally, there are people who listen to our podcast, and if you're listening to our podcast right now, you will notice there's no song bed underneath. Is that right, Jeffrey?
Indeed. So you are only hearing the dry audio, which
you're
is basically what comes out
the
of the
dry,
microphone.
Sadly. I mean, my voice is its own kind of music.
Yes, of course.
Clearly.
Audible chocolate, many
of. But what's happened is that for various copyright reasons, on the podcast, we scrub every sound other than our voices.
Correct. We had to
it's
create like a new feed. Yeah.
It's complicated, and we apologize. But for the full radio experience with all the music involved, you're gonna have to listen to us live.
Or you can go to the Odyssey app and you can select the chapters and you can select Jeff's best.
Oh, so you can listen
correct.
To it.
You can go back and listen on demand
on
the Odyssey app.
Yes. You can listen on the Odyssey app on demand. Do it that way. What's next, Jeffrey?
Jeff, this is a classic I don't believe in you spot. Louisville hosting SMU. I don't believe in SMU. I'll lay the 6.5 with Louisville.
Louisville -6.5. SMU certainly took Florida State to the woodshed.
Uh-huh. And who has it?
Well, Memphis didn't take them to the woodshed. Memphis just squeaked by. Here's the big one. Missouri, Texas A&M, ranked versus ranked. What do we think?
Jeff, since 2000, Texas A&M is 3-11 at Kyle Field when the Aggies are ranked and hosting a top 10 team. That spans six different coaches. R.C. Slocum was 0-2. Dennis Franchione, 0-1. Mike Sherman, 1-1. Kevin Sumlin, 1-4. Jimbo Fisher, 1-2. And Mike Elko, 0-1. This is the classic. I think everybody's just thinking this is the spot for A&M. I'm just going to take Missouri. Also,
Missouri gets 2.5?
Correct. Missouri getting 2.5. I believe also underdogs under 3 points.
It's funny. You do not believe in Texas A&M.
I do not.
I was listening to Cobb yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He does kind of believe in Texas A&M. He thinks it's a nice spot. First game back at Kyle Field since the Notre Dame.
Absolutely. All those things are true. I think also what it stems from is I kind of was higher on A&M during the summer, and I've...
You're bitter.
It's not even necessarily bitter. It's just like they've never once like flashed.
All right, next.
I also don't really believe in Marcel Reed. Jeff, we got a principal play here. We've been waiting.
Mm-hmm.
This is another reason why I believe it is indeed the week. We got service academies playing.
Yeah.
Navy and Air Force.
Each other, yeah. Uh-huh.
Since 1995, the under is 18-4 when Navy plays Air Force. 37 points, way too many. We'll take the under. Give me under 37.
Navy's favored in this game over Air Force by 9.5. Now, it doesn't do Memphis any good because it's not a conference game if Air Force were to knock off Navy.
For sure. Now, it could apply, I think, in tiebreakers, right?
If you were to pick the game, what would you say?
Service Academy games, you're just better off picking the dog. They're usually close games.
So you take Air Force plus 9.5.
Yeah.
All right, next.
Jeff, this is a fun one. Iowa has been shut out in its last three games against ranked opponents, losing by a combined score of 92-0.
New OC, man. They got a new OC.
Iowa's lost seven straight versus ranked opponents by a combined score of 235-44, scoring no more than 17 points in any contest. Jeff, we started to notice something last week.
What's that?
Something might be back in our portfolio. And it might just be blindly laying Ohio State.
Just go ahead and lay Ohio State.
18.5, I don't care. Do I think Ohio State can score 19 points? Yes, I do. I will lay the 18.5. Ohio State.
Indeed, of all of your wagers on this card, is this the one you feel best about?
No. No, that comes later.
Okay. Here's the game we were talking about earlier. Absolutely critical season-defining game for Ole Miss as they play South Carolina.
Jeff, this is just the classic. Everyone on the freaking planet thinks South Carolina is going to cover this number. And I think we are prisoners of the moment, and we are forgetting that college football has become more like the NFL. It is indeed more week to week. South Carolina has a very good and very athletic defensive front. But what South Carolina does not have is an offense that can stay on the field. Part of Ole Miss's problems last week was not being able to stay on the field. I think they got their cage rattled. I think they wake up. I'll lay the 8.5 with Ole Miss.
So you're not you're not fixated on the, oh my God, Memphis, I mean, Ole Miss couldn't handle Kentucky's defensive line, which, by the way, they could not.
For sure.
Last year.
They could not handle Deion Walker, which, and, by the way, Georgia couldn't either.
And South Carolina also has a.
But it's a very different. It's a little, it's not as, like, Deion Walker's 350 pounds. Right.
He's a big boy.
He's a beast. But to me, what this also comes back to is, I just don't think South Carolina is that good. I think Ole Miss game pressure got to them. They didn't play well. I think they'll play well. I think they'll play well tomorrow. I'll lay the 8.5.
Ole Miss -8.5 over South Carolina. Next.
Jeff, let's go
to
Nashville.
Oh my God.
Let's go to Nashville. And here's what I would like to point out.
Why are you gonna do this?
Jeff, were you watching the scene in Tuscaloosa? Following that fantastic win.
I saw the scene. It was
over Georgia.
Glorious.
When is the last time that you've ever watched Alabama celebrate a regular season win like that?
It's beneath Alabama to do that, really.
Well, to me, that's just... Does that smell like a hangover? That indeed smells like a hangover to me. 100% smells like a hangover. Give me Vanderbilt. +23.
Plus a mere 23?
I would also like to point out my boy Diego Pavia. I believe the number is 10-3 as an underdog. Let's see. Want to make sure I'm giving out accurate information. 8-2 as an underdog the last two seasons.
Vanderbilt +23 over Alabama.
Hangover special.
Clemson and our friend Mike Norvell and his Florida State team. And Brock Glenn, the... Pride of Lausanne.
Jeff, Florida State has been a home underdog of more than 14 points twice and lost those two games by a combined 104-25. In 2018, they lost to Clemson 59-10 as an 18.5-point dog. They also lost to Florida 45-15 in 2008 as a 16.5-point dog. Mike Norvell is 21-3 with Jordan Travis as his quarterback. Without Travis, Norvell is 3-5, including 1-4 this year. And with all due respect to the young man, Brock Glenn, he did not ask for this. But we cannot ignore what is true. And that is, my boy is a combined, let's see, 9 of 26 for 139 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Is this the game you feel best about?
This would be the game that I feel the best
and
about.
And so you like Clemson -15.
Yes.
So do I. Sadly. I'm sad to say that. Because I root for Brock Glenn and for Mike Norvell. Mm-hmm. But, oh, my gosh. Florida State can't score. Okay, Tennessee-Arkansas.
Jeff, Tennessee's a wagon.
Tennessee is a wagon.
13.5. Okay, cool.
Tennessee -13.5 over Arkansas. And finally, game day is going to be in Berkeley, of all things, at Cal, as Miami flies that
big bird,
the big ACC tilt.
Yes.
Between Miami and Cal.
Yes.
What do you think?
Mario Cristobal has faced Justin Wilcox 3 times when he has been ranked at Oregon against an unranked Cal team. Cristobal's teams haven't covered any of those three. And they lost outright as a 9.5-point favorite in 2020. In those three games, Cristobal's teams average 19.3 points. Justin Wilcox as an underdog. It's a principal play. 10.5. Give me the 10.5.
All right. So here we are. We got take Michigan at State +23.5 over Oregon. Take Syracuse -6.5 over UNLV. Louisville -6.5 over SMU. Missouri +2.5 over Texas A&M. That Navy Air Force tilt, go ahead and bet the under. It's 37. Ohio State, we just believe they're going to start beating the heck out of everybody. Mm-hmm. -18.5 over Iowa. Ole Miss bounce back. -8.5 over South Carolina. Vandy, because those folks from Alabama are hung the heck over. Vandy +23 over Alabama. Clemson, Florida State's woes continue. Clemson -15 over Florida State. Tennessee's a wagon. Tennessee minus 13.5 over Arkansas. Jeffrey, are you wagering? Do you think by the time we reconvene on Monday, there will be a new Florida coach and a new Arkansas coach? Is that your, is that, would you wager that?
No, I kind of think Florida might win.
I see. And so you think there will be neither?
I'm not willing to say that. If you set the,
I know, you've got to pick. No, no, it's straight up. Straight up. Here are your choices.
I'm going to say Arkansas moves on.
By Monday, Florida, Billy Napier will still be the Florida coach.
Yeah.
And Arkansas will have an interim.
That's my gut.
Who will not be Bobby Petrino?
You could talk me into he's going to be the interim, but they. I also think that I think it would be wise to give the interim to Tavarius Robinson.
And then the last game on the card, Cal plus 10.5.
Just Wilcox's dog, baby.
Over Miami. There you go. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. I got a correction, Jeffrey. Evidently, when I was reading the card back, I misspoke. It's Syracuse.
Plus 6.5.
Plus 6.5. Not Syracuse, of course. Minus 6.5. Over UNLV. The rest of the card we nailed. John walked in here and he wanted to clarify that I'd, when we talked about it originally, we were correct, but then when I read it back, I misspoke.
There's a lot of numbers flying.
A lot of numbers flying around here. It's higher math. I never liked math. But then he told me something else.
Yeah.
It's kind of brought me down.
Yeah.
And that is like my beloved Buffalo Bills. The news is breaking that Ed Oliver out for the Texans game and Khalil Shakir out for the Texans game. Bills have no players left. Von Miller already, of course, suspended for 4 games for his domestic incident. That one I took in stride. A, justice. B, 9 snaps last week. So now, mind you, that was against the Ravens. You don't really need, you know.
Right, there's not.
When you're getting pounded, there's not a lot of chances on third and long for Von Miller to get in there. So I could deal with that one. But literally, Khalil Shakir is their best receiver, and Ed Oliver is their leading receiver, and Ed Oliver, the one guy that Josh could still count on, and then Ed Oliver's their.
I didn't
best
realize this. So, Miles Simmons of Pro Football Talk. Ed Oliver's played 68% of snaps for a defensive tackle. That's
a lot. And the Bills typically rotate their snaps, dramatically. So I don't want to talk about any of this anymore. I'm kind of wrapping up here. But let me tell you this. Have you heard what's happened in Fat Bear Week?
So this is the, what are these? It's the pictures we get. It's like the what is it up in Alaska?
Yeah. So what happens is, and we've paid attention to Fat Bear Week before. Fat Bear Week is you get
they're preparing for hibernation, correct?
They're preparing for hibernation, and the fat bears, as the bears are eating the fish in the Brooks River, I think it is, up in Alaska. They have it was a genius idea. They set up cams, and you get to vote for your own fat bear, okay? And there's a bracket. It's a bracket. We love brackets in this country. Whatever. Favorite snack food bracket. Favorite, you know, dessert bracket. Favorite whatever. And a TV show bracket. Like all kinds of brackets. And this is... and they were about to start with Fat Bear Week when something happened.
Oh, no.
One of the bears killed another bear on cam.
Ooh.
That takes some of the fun. That takes some of the levity out of the whole situation,
bear on
doesn't
bear
it?
Crime.
A male bear with the identification number 469 and referred to as Patches, which is an awfully cute name given what happened, killed a female bear, identification number 402. And there you go. Evidently killed, attacked, and killed the bear, and then dragged the bear, and so they had to postpone the unveiling of the brackets. Now, I do think it's appropriate that 402 is obviously not participating at this point because she's dead, and 469 Patches also on the commissioner's list and is not going to be
4-game suspension
is not going to be participating. fattened up though. Like clearly, like is a
well, yeah, she was suspended.
So the male bear 469 is no longer participating in Fat Bear Week. If you want to go to the Fat Bear website, just pop on, type in Fat Bear, and you can see Fat Bears on your cam.
Listen, I don't want to victim blame Jeff, but
I don't.
Many were asking, was that bear asking for it?
No. The bear was just minding her own business fishing and was attacked by the big-assed
nature baby.
That's the thing. That's the thing. You put the cam there.
Boy.
We got cams on everything now. So anyway, I'm kind of depressed about the Bills. NHL season starts today. My beloved Buffalo Sabres play. And as I said, we have a big weekend with the Grizzlies open practice. And with...
October's the best.
It's funny. I watched a film, and we're going to talk to Kat Jamie next week at some point. Kat Jamie is this woman who directed a film called The Grizzly Truth. And The Grizzly Truth...
This is not about bears dying, correct?
Good segue,
mm-hmm.
But not about bears dying. After a fashion. It's about the Grizzlies leaving Vancouver
mm-hmm.
and coming to Memphis. And Kat Jamie she had moved to Vancouver from the Philippines. Her family was from the Philippines. Okay. And it turns out the basketball is huge in the Philippines. And so there she is feeling, using the same metaphor, fish out of water because the bears
right.
fish, whatever. And,
salmon.
And she really connected to her new community through the Grizzlies. They actually showed us in the film, they showed her room, and it just breaks your heart. It's just grizzly, 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 grizzly stuff everywhere. And then they up and leave, and they come to Memphis. And she's now grown up. She's become a documentary filmmaker. And she goes back to figure out why they left. What happened? Is there a villain? Right? Who to blame? Who do you think, by the way, would be on her list of villains?
The Canadian dollar?
The loony, is like we call it. In fact, did make the list of villains. I'll say this, though. The owner of the Raptors, who she interviewed, said that was an excuse.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be real. They moved because...
They made it. They made it. I mean, it was a complicated reasons, but what was interesting, so here's the
list... They just split the arena, too, correct?
Yeah. In the end, it was shockingly about money.
No way.
Yeah, shockingly about money. So the list of villains was Stu Jackson. Stu Jackson was a general manager of that team who drafted, you know... He drafted
Big Country Reeves
when he could have drafted Dirk Nowitzki, right? You know, whatever. Like, you know, that made a difference, right? He drafted.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people.
He drafted Steve Francis.
And then
traded him without, you know, and then folded. Like, he made the decision to draft Steve Francis. Steve Francis said he wouldn't come. And then he folded and traded Steve Francis. Okay.
Like a cheap chair.
So there's Stu Jackson who never built that team into anything close to resembling a winner.
Yep.
Okay. Steve Francis was another one who was the villain. Like, of course. Like, that team, when they drafted Steve Francis, they had Sharif Abdul-Rahim, they had Mike Bibby, and they had Big Country, who, by the way, I didn't realize this, one season averaged more than 21 points a game. Like, he was not a total bust forever, right? He wasn't just a big lug who came in and never was any good. And you add Steve Francis to that, and all of a sudden, and so Steve Francis was another villain. Mike Heisley? The guy who moved the team?
Well, yeah.
Absolutely a villain. But the amazing thing is, and we're going to talk to her and get her on next week. She tracked down all these people. Not Mike Heisley because he's deceased. But speaking of fat bears,
mm-hmm.
I say that with affection. Mike Heisley.
Not speaking
Mike Heisley used to joke that he looked like Grizz. You know, mm-hmm. but like the not super
before
Grizz
Super
either.
Grizz, yes.
Not the slimmer. Like he could have been the mascot. So but she went and she tracked down Steve Francis, and she tracked
and
him down.
Really?
He tracked him down at an autograph show because he wasn't responding.
Ah.
So she ambushed him at an autograph show in Houston. And in the end, she did get him to sit for an interview, and it's really good. But honestly, it just breaks your heart because you realize, I mean, I was thinking about this in open practice. They were only in Vancouver for 6 years and they've now been here. We are starting on year 24, year 24 in Memphis. And what a pleasure it has been to have him here. But the film comes to this. So in the end, she comes to Memphis. She's like, as she and so many Vancouver Grizzly fans have vowed never to root for the Grizzlies, you know, once they leave, never to set food here, any of that stuff. And in the end, in this film, it ends with her actually making a trip to Memphis and going to a Grizzlies game. And it is really affecting. It's a fabulous film. It's called The Grizzly Truth. We'll talk to her next week. I hope you all have a great weekend. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. It is, of course, Friday, so that means Anthony Sain will join the guys today. Football Friday with me and Tim Murray. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us during the first hour. It's Friday, so that means Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to take a break. We got to get out of here. We will be back on Monday. For now, our work is done.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.